The Murthy law firm has been clarifying US immigration laws and procedures for foreign nationals since 1994. We are happy to offer this free service. Please listen to copyright information and restrictions at the end of this recording.
Welcome. This is Sheila Murthy, and I'm honored and delighted to have Aaron Finkelstein, our managing attorney, and Kanya Sanders, a member and one of the coordinators for the non-immigrant department, discuss restructuring mergers, acquisitions, and the impact on H-1B and green card processes. For today, we're going to have Aaron Finkelstein acting as the moderator and giving us a background and going through the debate and the discussion. So with that, Aaron, let me allow you to get started. Thank you all for joining us.
So hello, everybody, and I hope you're doing well on this fine day. So when you think about, you know, employment-based immigration, you think about corporations, and you recognize that a corporation is the entity that in most cases is sponsoring the individual for that employment-based opportunity in the United States. But what happens when a corporation restructures? What happens when the very essence of the entity that's sponsoring somebody changes? And we see this does happen frequently. It happens when there's a downturn in an economy, as an example, not the only time that it happens, but as an example, where you'll see corporations will merge or corporations will be acquired or other types of things will take place. And the question here that we're discussing is what you need to do and how those particular restructures impact the immigration processes that people are doing. So in order to go forward, I'm just going to set the table for everybody, and then I'm going to invite Sheila and Kanya to join me in helping us to go through these processes. So the first thing that comes up is, if we're talking about restructuring, what types of corporate reorganization can exist that we need to focus on and that we need to decide about? Well, there are several different types of reorganization, and I'm just going to go through a short list of some of them. One type could be a stock purchase, and a stock purchase perhaps is the most straightforward in a sense where one company or entity will purchase the stock of another company, and by purchasing the stock of the new company, essentially the ownership interest has changed because the majority shares or the whole entity is now owned by somebody else. But the company itself has not really restructured. And in that process of acquiring the shares of the company, you're also acquiring the liabilities of that company in that process. Another method of a reorganization could be something where you have a merger that takes place. A merger that takes place is where there are two companies, and one company subsumes into the second company. When I say subsumes, I mean, it takes its entire entity and it moves or morphs itself into the other company, where there's only one company that survives that process. And that company, of course, during the merger, also takes on the assets and liabilities of the other company. So the first one is a stock purchase. The second one could be a merger. The third one is something that's called an initial public offering. And an initial public offering is where there's a private company that initially goes through the process of selling its shares to the public. And this could be done because investors want to get out. This can be done because they want to raise capital in order to do research and development or to grow their company or to grow what they have. And so that's a third way that a restructuring can take place. A fourth way is something that's called a spin-off. And a spin-off is essentially that there's a branch or division of a company that has a unique set of duties or responsibilities, and that branch or division is spun off to create its own separate company in which it continues to perform the same way that it performed before, except now that it's acting as its own individual entity on in and of itself. Another way is something that's simple. It's relocation to a new address. Company doesn't really change. Nothing really is changing, but they're moving from location A to location B. And similar to a relocation change is also something that could be a corporate name change, where the infrastructure, the FEIN number, so to speak, the fundamentals of the company remain the same, but the company is now operating as a going concern under a new name. So those are, when we're talking about corporate restructuring, these are some, or the majority, or perhaps all, of the types of restructuring that we're looking at. So Sheila, keeping this in mind, can you tell us which types of reorganizations require a new filing on behalf of a foreign national worker and which ones don't?
That's a great question. So as you just heard from an overview and background, there are different kinds of ways that entities can become, you know, have a success or an interest. But for U.S. immigration law purposes, the crux of the issue is a new filing or an amendment is required when the new entity does not assume all the liabilities. Because if it's, then you need either a new petition or an amendment. Otherwise, in many cases, the same process can continue if there's an assumption of assets and liabilities of the new entities, right? So that's the crux of the issue. So also, if there's a significant change in work location, in job title or duties, then an H-1B amendment is required, for example, or a new filing is required. There was something called the Visa Waiver Permanent Act, which actually changed the entire landscape. Before that, whenever there was even the simplest of mergers and acquisitions, the law required the employer, the new entity, to just file. And so when there were thousands or hundreds and hundreds of employees, they would lose hundreds of thousands of dollars in having to file new H-1 petitions for all of the employees. But thanks to negotiations and discussions with the USCIS, the current position is, as long as it's the person is doing the same job, same location, same everything, and the new entity has assumed the assets and liabilities, we should be in a good place. A quick practice pointer here, if the employee is traveling, we generally recommend at the Mooty Law Firm some type of an amendment petition to avoid, you know, confusion or delays either at the U.S. consulate when they're applying for the visa or at the U.S. with CBP at the U.S. port of entry, whether it's an airport, land port, or seaport. Again, a lot of times the consular officers are aware of the law, but it just makes it easier to say, here's my employer, here's the name of the new the current entity, and I've got a petition amendment for that entity. Now, where do we not require amended filings? Just as I explained, right? Where a merger, where there is two or more companies which merge in a surviving entity, which then acquires all the assets and liabilities of the company that has merged. In that example that Aaron, for example, just gave, where company A and company B both merge, and let's say A survives that merger. In that case, it usually merges and the new surviving company assumes all of the assets and liabilities of both A and B, which then meets the USCIS definition of successor in interest. And that test then says we don't need to do a new amendment or a new petition. Whereas if it's a mere corporate change, a name change, right, where for whatever reason they decide to change their name, or if it's a location change, as long as it's within the same metropolitan statistical area or MSA, that probably will not require any type of new filing. So what about when is it required for H-1B workers to file an amendment or a change during a reorganization? Kanya?
Thank you, Sheila. Right. So as you said, you know, you distinguish between when a new filing is required and, you know, when it's not. So if there are new filing is required, as you said, if they don't accept the assets and liabilities, there's significant changes in work location as a result of the reorganization, then a new filing will be required. So in the H-1B worker context, we want to talk about what is required when, you know, such a reorganization takes place and you need to file a new petition. So if the restructuring falls into a category that requires a filing, generally an amended or change of employer petition must be filed before the change goes into effect, because, you know, you need to be authorized to work for the resulting entity or the resulting job location at the time the change takes place. So you do need to file it before the change takes place. Now, if the restructuring falls into a category that does not require an amended filing, there are still some actions an employer will need to take depending on the form of the reorganization. So, say, corporate name change. You need to provide documents which shows, you know, you went through the legal requirement to record the name change. When you're filing, and even though you don't need to file something at the time or before it takes place, at the next extension filing, you would need to provide those documents to say, hey, our name was this before. We've gone through the legal process to record our name as, you know, as this. So you would need to include that. Location change. If it's within the same metropolitan statistical area or within commuting distance, no action is required. If it is outside of those two definitions, and if the worker's work location is the company address, then an amended petition is needed before the location change. Now, even if the company is moving, but the work location for the individual was the either a client site or the employee's home address, and that is not changing, then even if the company address changes, nothing needs to be filed, because, you know, the already filed petition, the labor condition application, will cover their existing work location. Now, the corporate merger, which meets the successor in interest test, which means they have assumed all the assets and liabilities of the company, the company still needs to update their public access file with a memo from the company officer describing the merger and, you know, assuming the obligations of the labor condition application. So they have to make a statement assuming all of the obligations in the labor condition application. And they would also need to include documents pertaining to the purchase to show that the purchase meets the successor in interest test.
That's great, Kanya. And I know that we just talked about for H-1B workers, but the second part of that would be, what about for the permanent side? What is required for an I-140 petition if the corporate restructuring takes place after the perm has already been filed? So if the corporate restructuring falls into a category that requires a filing, then a new perm application has to be filed by the new entity. But if the restructuring falls into a category that does not require a new filing, if the restructuring meets the successor in interest test, then if the original entity, the predecessor entity, has not filed an I-140, then a new petition must be filed within the validity period of the perm certification. But if the predecessor entity has already filed an I-140, then the successor in interest company can file an amended I-140 when the corporate restructuring takes place and does not have to file a new perm or labor certification process. Sheila, what do you think? What documentation will be required in order to get this done?
Sure. So since we said in most H-1 cases you don't need an amendment, but in the green card, you probably need the I-140 amendment or the new I-140. So depending on the situation, you either need the new I-140 petition or an amended. So you would check off the new or amended I-140 petition, which must be accompanied by all of the documentation that is required for all I-140 petitions, which is generally, for example, to establish in this case, the qualifying, the transfer of the ownership of the predecessor to the current successor in interest, right? So we need all of that proof. We also need to always meet what we call the ATP, the ability to pay tests, other requirements, which have to be met in order for the I-140 amendment to be successful. The employer has to show their tax returns, their proof, their assets exceed their liabilities, all of those extremely complex cases, because most I-140s are denied because of the employer's inability to pay the salary of the employee forevermore, right? And if there is no other material change in the job offer, then you just establish that, mention that, state that, and we still need to show that the job offer is available in the area of intended employment as listed on the perm, even with this new successor in interest or future employer. So as you can see, it's similar documents with the additional documents to attest to the successor in interest of the merger and acquisition, all of those kinds of documents.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Sheila. And, you know, just in closing, I just want to say that mergers and acquisitions can be very confusing before you even introduce the immigration aspect to it. And once you introduce the immigration aspect to it, all of a sudden, the first thing that most employers see is dollar signs. They see, oh my God, how much is this going to cost me? How long is it going to take? How will this impact my workforce? And will I be just mired in this complete process, you know, of having to reestablish my employees all over again? As Sheila and Tanya have demonstrated, in many cases, that's not the circumstances. In many cases, there are things that you can do to be able to, so to speak, keep your employees working actively, to keep things going well, and to mitigate the costs that are associated with mergers and acquisitions. Murphy Law Firm, we've been doing this for a very long time, and I'm honored to be able to say that I sit at the feet of one of the best and the brightest attorneys that I've ever met, Sheila Murphy herself. And I can tell you that if an issue comes up where you have a merger or an acquisition or any type of corporate restructuring, this is an area that we truly know and that we could certainly be very helpful for you to help in your continued success of your company as your companies move forward to better and brighter things. On behalf of Murphy Law Firm, on behalf of Tanya Sanders, on behalf of Sheila Murphy, I thank you all very much, and we really hope that this helps as you progress forward. Have a wonderful day.
This is a free service. The content is the protected, copyrighted property of the Murphy Law Firm. Unauthorized recording or dissemination of these materials without prior permission is prohibited by law. Learn about our firm, how to engage our services, and more at www.murthy.com.